Hi, Martin.
Hey, welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here. My name is Jonathan Lipp from the Big Apple Film Festival, and thank you for joining our Agents and Managers Conference this week. Just as a reminder, our festival is going on all throughout the week up until Friday, May 27th, with films available in person at the SVA Theater in New York City, as well as virtually. In addition to that, we have our Agents and Managers Conference. And with us now, we have Martin Toe, who is an agent with the A3 Artist Agency. Hello, Martin. How you doing?
Hi.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. And again, just as a reminder, all access pass holders, please be sure to fill out the registration form in order to be able to share information on your project, which we will then share with all of our speakers this week. So please make sure to do that. And at this point, I will send it over to our moderator, Diane Wheeler, who will try to get to as many questions as possible. So thank you, Diane, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. And again, hello and welcome, Martin. So glad you're here. And if you could just tell us, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a Texan born and raised, if we're going to go that far back. I went to school in New York, had no inkling of the entertainment industry. My parents made me go to law school where I thought, maybe I'll do something interesting like entertainment law, which brought me to an internship at UTA my first summer of law school, and just kind of fell in love with the industry and being kind of on the business side of a creative industry. And from there, I graduated law school, started the UTA mailroom, worked my way up to coordinator in the TV Lit department, and went to be a manager for 2 years. And then went back to an agency, was at Paradigm for 2 years before COVID, and then kind of part of the lit team at Paradigm moved over to A3. So I was part of that move.
Okay, well, thanks so much. And so our first question right into it. I'm a writer director and I've just made a short film. And my question is, if you're just starting out and have a short film that you have recently made, would that work as a reel instead of a sizzle reel?
Well, it depends on what you want to use the short film for. If it's something that you directed and you want to use it as a sample, I think that having the short film is that more valuable than having a sizzle reel. I think just looking at sizzle reels, it's more difficult to see kind of your point of view and your direction than just having the short. Now, if the short film is a proof of concept to be developed, again, I would say having that short film will give a better sense than a sizzle reel. We work in Hollywood. We all know that editors can do magical things. And so having the whole thing in front of us is a better barometer for us.
Okay. And does A3 accept unsolicited material?
I think like most representation in Hollywood, we don't really take unsolicited materials. I know it's like a chicken or the egg thing, but I think there are a lot of competitions around now that exist, and other groups outside of LA that are helpful in kind of navigating that. And there are some groups that are more successful than others. I'm not gonna name names, but if you're not living in LA, that tends to be kind of the way in. Otherwise, it's definitely a industry town where being here and networking and getting yourself indoor through any way possible is the ideal way to get into the industry.
Okay. And this is along the same lines. How does an indie filmmaker with a film in post-production find a sales agent?
Yeah, that is, I did a stint in film financing. It was probably the hardest job ever. And I would not hesitate to say, it's just a very different business in TV, right? There are studios and there's a process. In indie film, as far as I know, it's really just finding out who those sales agents are. There are a lot of them. They go from really big time sales agents at big agencies to smaller ones that take a look at a lot of things. But again, I think it is a lot of these places tend to not take unsolicited materials. It would have to come from someone they know, or you know, they see it at one of these competitions that you can enter, or a smaller festival you can enter.
Okay. And when it comes to creating an IP, what is crucial to have legally sent with your pitch to an agent or a production company?
I think the WGA generally frowns on sending printed materials. I think that is kind of a position that they have. For our clients, when we take pitches out, it's with producers we've worked with before. And so there's a certain trust that we have in each other. We prefer, and I think producers and buyers prefer to hear an oral pitch versus read a written pitch. I find that to be more useful. I know a lot of people trying to break in will create packets. And in general, I find that those packets don't have enough information to really get people excited. I think there is a structure to a pitch that needs to dive in a little bit more. And I would say, most importantly, it's the character development. A lot of TV series now are more character-based than world-based. And even if it's a big world, it's character-based.
Okay. And I've optioned a couple of scripts that didn't sell. Is that a plus or a minus to include in a writer introduction letter?
I think this is a hard one. I think that, you know, getting something optioned is always an achievement. The process of development is, there's so many steps in which something could fall apart. And so that first step is a point saying that, you know, someone was interested in this, there's something there. On the flip side, sometimes it suggests that, you know, especially if it's optioned by people that we don't know, it doesn't say as much to us than having it optioned by someone that we worked with in the industry.
Okay. And once a short film has done the festival circuit, what is the best place to put it? So perhaps Amazon stopped hosting unsolicited content, but other options, what could they be? Vimeo. So what's next?
Yeah, I mean, all those things are options. There isn't going to be a distributor that is going to pay you generally if it wasn't already picked up by a distributor. And you know, it's a lot of your own legwork. It is an indie film. And so you would be the one that would try to market it and get it to as many eyes as possible.
Okay. Do you have any suggestions for an indie web series working towards pitching the show to a network?
In terms of web series, I think that the industry have kind of moved away from that. You know, we had that quick moment with Quibi and Snapchat, and all those platforms have not really had any success in doing so. I think the industry is still very focused on the traditional TV series right now, and the kind of smaller bites, as Quibi called them, tend to not, it's harder to find a place.
Okay. And so in your theater division, are you most interested in musicals, dramas, comedies? What genre? Yeah.
So in our theater group, it's very robust, and they represent musical theater writers, they represent playwrights, drama, comedy, producers. So yeah, they do kind of represent the gamut of the theater industry.
Okay. And other film festivals, other than film festivals and contests, what are some other ways to get representation for your script?
Well, this is the million-dollar question.
Right.
It's perseverance, it's not working. There is no linear roadmap to doing this. You know, mm-hmm. I represent people who I read their script the first time and passed on. And then, you know, the second time it came through a manager, and, you know, it changed my mind because I had some more support from a manager. You know, we get things from lawyers, we get things from execs, we get things from our clients and from our friends. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is really just really pushing. And like I said, I think that there are some of these programs that are helpful in getting scripts out there. You know, I've read a few of them, but like I said, it is a very network driven industry. So it is not easy. We get unsolicited emails every single day. And unfortunately for us, our legal counsel won't allow us to take a look at any of these things unless it comes from a source that we have worked with.
Mm-hmm. Do you see something like IMDb contacting people through that, or LinkedIn as a viable networking, you know, opportunity for?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that, like, that, especially if you're outside LA, it's doing that hard work. It's not fun. It may not yield a lot of results. But at the same time, like I tell my clients that are going out with a project, it only takes one person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And right. That is kind of how I think about it. Like I said, it is not an easy industry to break into, but
yeah,
there are clients who I know that have, you know, were on the outside and now they're looking in. And so it's really just pushing as much as you can.
Okay. And this is just a follow-up on the question about the indie web series, and wanting to clarify, we're planning to pitch it as a longer form show, similar to how Issa Rae did,
yeah.
Or High Maintenance. Are there any suggestions in that case?
You know, I think it's again, it all of this is so much chicken and the egg, or the egg. So you know, I think getting notoriety for that web series, I think there's still competitions that kind of focuses on the web series. That's very important. Again, it's really about getting it into people's hands, and you know, that goes back to, you know, your perseverance and you pushing as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And do you attend play readings or fringe theater festivals?
You know, that's kind of outside what I do now. I did when I was a younger agent.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you never know where that new voice comes from. And, you know, it's just at my point of my career, there's less time for that. And I have to spend much more time with my clients.
Okay. And do you need to secure rights for a story that was a court case, for a podcast, docuseries, and or feature?
You know, court cases are public documents. Mm-hmm. So anything that's in it, this is where law school comes in handy.
Right. Yeah.
anything that comes from public documents are free for you to use. You know, it having life rights help in that now you have that person on your side and they're not gonna, you know, fight you. I know Lifetime does this a lot, where they do the unauthorized biopic of, you know, some public figure, and they don't have the life rights, and that's fine. It's just that now the public figure can say something to the detriment of the show. So anything that's in public domain or in public record is available for you to use. And that's true, I think, for articles in newspapers and magazines, unless you're using the exact information that is from the newspaper or magazine, you can generally use it as a jumping off point without having to secure rights.
Okay. And again, this goes to more creating a list of ways to connect with people or brainstorming on that. And how do you find an agent or a manager if no one wants unsolicited material?
This is where the networking is important. I think it's significantly harder to do it outside of LA. It is, you know, everyone here who comes out here to be a writer, they view it as a career. It's definitely much harder to do it as a hobby or a side hustle. That's like I said, there are clients that we represented that came here and knew nobody, and you know, by living here, just kind of being in writers groups and going to theater and doing those things kind of connect you to other artists, and that's generally how, you know, we all get connected.
Mm-hmm. And you have A3 has offices in New York, LA, and the UK. So yeah. are you accepting projects, international projects here in the US?
Yes. I actually also handle formats, mostly in from Korea and Japan as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, IP coming out of other international, from the international community, is something that we definitely will look at.
If you're LA based and have a feature film that was wrote and directed currently that's in post-production, would you suggest going the film festival route first prior to reaching out to managers and agents?
I think, again, this is like, there's no right or wrong way to do this. I think, you know, sending it to managers and agents to hopefully get that one person to watch is a very good idea. Mm-hmm. And then you can attack it secondarily with the film festival. So mm-hmm. They're not mutually exclusive. You can do both. And like I said, sometimes you have something, you sent something out and, you know, someone looked at it or didn't look at it, but then you take another route and it comes back to the same person. And now this person's interested.
Okay. Can you give us an idea of a trajectory of a project that was submitted to you and what the process is in terms of when you first set eyes on it to production?
I work mostly in the TV space, and the TV landscape has changed a lot. When I started, I chose TV because there were specific seasons. There was a development season in the summer, and then things get picked up to pilot, and then it it's picked up to series or it goes away. TV has become more like the feature business, where things can take a very long time to get off the ground. Mm-hmm. One of the first projects I sold to Starz was when I was a manager. So this is 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And only this year has Starz started talking about casting the lead. So that was one situation where it took 5 years to get a TV. I mean, it might even take longer to get off the ground. Mm-hmm. In the TV space, when you're doing a broadcast show, that's a little bit quicker. I think that tends to fit more in the, you know, get out in the summer, it gets a pilot pickup in the fall, and then in the spring we figure out who's going to series and move on from there. The feature space is generally a long and tedious road. Mm-hmm. A lot of the, as you can see in theaters right now, it's like a lot of bigger movies, and then you have the Netflix and Amazon who are spending money on movies as well, but a lower budget. Mm-hmm. And that requires a lot of packaging and putting things together, getting directors on board, getting actors on board, and everyone's schedule is subject to change, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're packaging a project together with hot actors or a hot director or what have you, you know, things can move around. And so, you know, it is, again, an act of really your act of like staying the course and being passionate without, you know, losing that interest or that drive.
Okay. And so if a writer emails an agent and tells them that their series has an Emmy winning EP and a Golden Globe winning EP attached, and say nothing about the content, is that still an unsolicited submission?
This is where we become very, very cynical people. If you have an award-winning EP and a Golden Globe-winning director or what have you, we assume that they have agents, and we assume that their agents are aware. And so, so something like that kind of raises kind of our bat signal a little bit, saying, "So what is the other party doing? If they're the EP, they should be producing."
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so given the current climate, you know, being in the middle of COVID, you were saying earlier that it takes so much longer, so much more time to make a feature versus TV. If you're a new writer starting out, do you think it is, you know, there's any more weight to focusing on a TV script versus writing a feature? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I used to kind of lean more towards, you know, write a TV series, but I've become, you know, I think the marketplace has kind of readjusted itself where the streaming platforms are figuring out their movie development, their feature development. So I'm back to saying, you know, there is still, I wouldn't say frothy, but still good business in the feature space in terms of selling scripts. And, you know, as a young writer, it's about a spec script. You know, a pitch is probably not going to work because these producers they need to see a sample, right? And again, pitch decks tend to not have enough of that information as well. So if there's a feature script that you want to write, I would say definitely spec it out. Because that is essentially the proof of concept for a new writer.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on pitch decks and sizzle reels?
Yeah, I think I've mentioned this. And you know, starting at A3, it's really funny because I've never really got a whole bunch of pitch decks or sizzle reels. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've been getting it more at A3 because our theater department, again, is very robust. And then our unscripted department is also very robust. And that in the unscripted department, I'm finding out that when the first WGA strike happened, a lot of writers that moved to LA were like, oh, well, we're kind of screwed for now. So I'm going to go do the new thing, which is blowing up in the TV space, which is the unscripted world. And so a lot of our unscripted producers do have projects that they want to do. And in that space, these pitch decks are more important in terms of how they go out to the marketplace. It is less so in the TV and feature space. A pitch deck is useful as ancillary materials, but cannot be the primary material to go out with in the marketplace.
Okay. So for someone who's written quite a few screenplays and option projects that were canceled during COVID, what do you think the best way is to find a manager if there's somebody who can pivot quickly and write under pressure?
I mean, I think it is still the same. I think like it's really just finding, you know, it's the hustle of finding that person that is, you know, want to give you the chance. And there's so many managers out there. Generally, I would say finding a manager is probably easier than finding an agent. There's a finite number of agents. There are, I think, a lot more managers out there. It's just the way that we're set up. You know, agents have to be bonded and all that good stuff. And so I would say like the hustle there is just to find the manager and you know, it's that perseverance of just pushing through.
And what about pitching to multiple agents at once? Is that recommended, or would you focus on one that you knew was more inclined to look at your genre?
Well, I think it's a numbers game. And you know, we do that same thing with our clients. Like when we take out a piece of development, we know it's right for one place, but we still take it out everywhere, just because you never know. So I would say, you know, reaching out to as many people as you can is ideal. And then you can make your choice after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a specific genre right now that could be, you know, hotter than others at this time?
It changes so often. I think we're in this period right now, we're very much in true crime space. And I feel like that might go away pretty soon, and then the marketplace is on to something else. Westerns have become kind of interestingly in vogue again, the Yellowstone. You know, it's really, I think the most important part is watch what's out there. And my advice to my clients is always watch what's out there, but don't mimic what's out there. Because no one needs to buy another Yellowstone, but they might want a Western that approaches it in a very different point of view.
Like a Westworld.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like CW has Walker Independence, which is a period Western, and it's very CW. It's very, you know, sexy and you know, but it's a very different point of view than Yellowstone in the way that it's executed. So definitely watch what's out there. Don't try to mimic anything. It never works. Like when Empire was a huge success on TV, everyone said that they wanted their blank version of Empire, and none of us have seen that version of Empire.
Yeah. What made it so compelling is the originality of it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And since so few movies are made from the screenplay contest winners, why is this avenue still so popular?
I think it's still very popular because there are, you know, our younger agents or coordinators or assistants are the ones that are combing through these contest scripts. So that is kind of, if you're looking for representation, that is a good way in. Even if you have representation, writing a script and getting it sent out doesn't, or having it being option doesn't mean that there's a sure way to getting it on screen. Our whole business is predicated on selling scripts, but the pipeline is much smaller than the script buying marketplace. So that's just the nature of the situation.
And do you think there's value in, if you are a writer starting out, being a reader and writing those synopses, becoming aware of what agents are picking up on and what are some, you know, things to flag or things to avoid? Is there any, you know, value starting in different areas that will give you a bigger insight?
Yeah, I think there is value in doing anything kind of in the industry itself. I think reading, like I said, watching what's out there, reading what other people are writing and is helpful in terms of understanding what's out there, what you should be doing, what people are doing wrong, which is also important as well. You know, writers come from kind of every walk of life in Hollywood right now. You know, we have writers that started as assistants to agents, and their sense of the marketplace and how they present themselves in the marketplace is based on their time working as an agent's assistant. And so mm-hmm. there are writers who work in production. So they have a sense of how production works and how to put that into a script. So all these things that you can do to kind of hone your skill and kind of get you a certain expertise of the industry is very helpful, I think.
Okay. And so here's a question about being unique. So on the spectrum of being unique, we've heard a few speakers in the session talk about how, you know, finding your voice and really honing that and staying true to that will make, you know, will make it, your work stand out. So, but what about something that's too unique? How would you know where on the spectrum you should place yourself?
I think, you know, storytelling in a more commercial sense, I'll put it that way. There's a universality to it, right? You can write about your experience, but how does that experience relate to other people? And how do people understand it? I think that's kind of the difficult part, because we all have unique stories, but it's like getting it to a place where other people can understand it, relate, sympathize with it is what you want to try to do. And I think the question is rooted in truth. The clients that, you know, are the young clients that I represent that have projects set up are generally projects that they come in that is authentic to them, their experience, their voice. The project I was talking about that was set up at Stars, the jumping off point was my client who was a comedy writer. She went back home and she kind of fell in love with her crush that she had from childhood, and it just was not a relationship she should be in. And so she wrote the script about it, and it's kind of a what if script. And it, when I first read it, and it was written as a TV script that was 90 pages long, which is way too long, but I felt every second of it. I understood her experience. Even though I never experienced anything like that, I understood her experience, and it just came off as something that she really, that was from her and that was unique to her. But at the same time, other people understood where she was coming from.
The universality.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to look at it. So, a winner of many festivals worldwide and looking for a producer here to help. How do you go about finding a producer in that, knowing that you've had that success?
Yeah, I think that is, I think, you know, if you get an IMDb subscription or I personally, because IMDb is kind of more commercially known. We tend to use like Variety Insight or Studio System. I think it's, and this is going to be like, you know, the hustle part of it. Find the lowest person at the production company, because that the principal of that production company, he or she is no longer reading submissions from anyone. It's her team that is the gatekeeper, and they're the ones that are going to be reading. It's an assistant, because a lot of assistants are CE as well, especially at film production companies. They're the ones on the ground that it's like they want to rise up. They're like there to find new voices and new scripts to produce. Their bosses are getting incoming calls from the big agencies about something that their client has. So I think that if in terms of the hustle, I think that's kind of the approach I would take, knowing what I know.
Mm-hmm. And so another question, if you live in different parts of the country, this particular writer lives in Connecticut, how important do you think it is to be in LA or New York if you're writing elsewhere?
Yeah, I think it's kind of paramount. it goes back to the networking part of it. Mm-hmm. That being said, there are people that break through. I have a client, a writing team, who actually don't even live in the same state. But one lives in Florida and the other one's in Georgia, but they had this script that somehow got to my boss. I don't know the story behind it, but it is now set up at Sony. And so it was one of those scripts that just kind of stood out. And this goes back to, watch everything, read everything, but find something that's like, we don't like, if we get sent a script that is, Friends set in, 2022, that's not interesting to us. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say a lot. A script that just stands out. It doesn't matter where you live, essentially. We'll figure out a way, especially during this time, because after COVID, very few producers and studio execs are interested in meeting people face to face. It's become a time saver for them to just Zoom. And so, the upside of this is that you don't need to be in LA to meet producers or execs. If you have a team put together, or you don't even need to be here to find a manager or an agent, because if you break through, the process is mostly through Zoom at this point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that being said, the whole networking part of it is, it's harder to do when you're not in LA.
Physically, yeah. But there is that component, like you say, the virtual networking, and that is valuable too, in addition to the film festivals. Mm-hmm. And finding your way to an assistant, maybe it's through IMDb, maybe it's even through LinkedIn, but there are more than the traditional avenues of face-to-face, but then there's some virtual opportunities as well.
Yeah, and COVID has kind of opened it up a little bit. We do have clients that just left LA and, now they can do their pitches from home, wherever they are.
Yeah. And so we're coming to a close for our time, and just wondering if you can, talk more about the types of things that might be, attractive right now, or in your opinion, let's just say for a new director, what could be an area of focus right now for them?
I think it's all about continuing to work on your craft. Like I said before, I think there's no right or wrong genre or type of feature or TV that you should be writing. I think I say this to my clients as well, it's really just write something that moves you, that you're passionate about, because we can see it when we read a script, when it's just I'm writing to X or I'm writing to Y, and it's because this thing is successful. We see it, and like when you lose your voice in anything that you do, it becomes less, it doesn't stand out as much. We also try to be very cognizant as people who live on the coast of stories that are not from the coast. And that is also, leads me to say there is a movement to tell stories not from the coast, actually. There's a movement to tell stories from Americans outside of that. I think it's very important. We've expanded what can be shown on TV and the worlds we see on TV. And I think that's also part of that world as well. And I think that should be acknowledged. Diane, I think you're on mute.
Sorry about that. One more question here. Again, as a young actor, filmmaker in New York City, What is the best way to build brand or notoriety in order to garner more opportunities? And this is beside the festival circuit or social media.
The social media thing, that's hilarious, right? But
is that legitimate, do you think?
The social media thing is very, very legitimate. We have one of the biggest digital departments, and they mostly work in the unscripted space. But from what I've heard, in terms of casting, having that social media is important. They'll ask, casting directors will ask how many people, how many followers you have. Mm-hmm. A lot of the business now is having to self-promote. Let's say you're an actor and you're on a Netflix show. A lot of Netflix shows don't get the marketing budget. So it's about understanding how to self-promote. That's writers as well, learning how to self-promote, because sometimes the distributor isn't going to do it for you. So I think having that is very important. And then now I've lost the question. So, Brianne, if you could repeat.
Sure, of course. So what is the best way to build brand notoriety in order to garner more opportunities besides the festival and social media?
Yeah, I think if you're in New York doing theater, doing the fringe thing, if you're a comedy person, go do stand-up. Go to these comedy classes that they have. A lot of people meet each other through those venues. Mm-hmm. There's a sense that artists help other artists, but also sometimes artists become something else, an exec, or they become a producer. I think if you get to live in New York or LA, use those resources of just connecting with people. It is kind of paramount. Like there are clients that I get that are from like my other clients' writers group. And there are clients who have been doing this forever and they still have writers groups. Mm-hmm. And so you try to get into one of those where there are people that have made it already and they can be helpful. I think in LA, the other opportunities are, working as an assistant in production, a writer's assistant. There's all these opportunities where you can rise up. We have clients that have been, PAs, and not even like the highest PA, the PA that's been, that is sent out to get coffee. And they work their way up and ingratiate themselves to the team, because it's, working on set, you have access to showrunners and directors and producers that are on set. And, that's
build trust.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking about a director, Sujata Day, who her film Definition Please was picked up by Ava DuVernay and Array, and Netflix showed it as well. But she was on Insecure with Issa Rae, and even still after that, with her film, she still did the film festival circuit. She still did podcast after podcast interview. Yeah. So being persistent and consistent, it just seems like at any level, that's the best way that you can be successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, parting words of advice. We have 1 minute left. Go.
I think, Diane, you kind of encapsulated it. It is persistence. It is passion. It is wanting it more than anything else. The people that we represent, some of them have had first careers, second careers, and this is something that they just couldn't stop pursuing. Like they were like, I did my adult thing and now I want to do this. And truly, those are the clients that we enjoy the most because they have world experience. A writer come, it's kind of like when I went to law school, like you can go from college to law school, but you have no experience in how the world works. So, not understanding the world makes it harder to kind of appreciate what you're learning and putting it in a practical sense. And I think it's this, and the same thing in entertainment too, because shows are becoming so specific. And this is on the TV side. You know, sometimes they're looking for doctors and lawyers or people who've been in the military for that authenticity, because authenticity now is the most important thing in TV and features.
Okay. Over to you, Jonathan.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time to be here. Again, Big Apple Film Festival runs until this Friday. All access pass holders, please fill out the registration form so we could share info on your project with all of our speakers. I want to thank Martin Toe from the A3 Artist Agency for being here. Thank you. Thank you, Diane, for moderating. And in about 15 minutes, we are going to have our next conference with Tijuana Jackson, agent and founder of the Jackson Agency. So thank you, Martin. Thank you, Diane. And we'll see you soon. Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.